Hello and welcome to Escape into Storytelling. I'm Jennifer Bradley and this is a chapter from my self-published novel, Virago. New episodes drop each Monday and all chapters will be available at the end of the book. As always, there is no charge. Virago is intended for a mature audience and today's episode contains language, threats, and discussion of fertility issues. If you missed last week's episode, it is available from the same podcast source. Now please, sit back and escape into storytelling with me in today's episode. Chapter 28. Winston's household repairs are interrupted. Adelaide learns even more unexpected and painful truths. Winston woke.
Gods, my back!
He was at home, on his and Melora's bed. He'd passed out in full uniform, including boots and boiled leather. His helmet lay like an overturned tortoise on his pillow. Through the open window, dawn crept along the gray horizon.
Damn it. So much for sleeping in on my day off.
He sat up, grimacing and working the stiffness from his joints. Without fire, blankets, or his wife, the room was cold.
What a night. Poor Hawkins. He'd never seen someone die. Of all the ugly ways to go, being beaten and dumped in an alley is in the top five. Carver. I remember him from a few brushes before, but never imagined he'd go out like that. Seemed harmless enough.
The old dead drunk had been bad, but the man with the staring eyes who'd been with the drunk had somehow been worse. Winston asked the man if he had a home, somewhere to go, and the man nodded, but still seemed dazed.
If I'd had anyone to spare, I would have made them walk him home, but I didn't. We're down to the bone these days. Anyway, nothing to be done about it now. The body's at the Cinderists, and I stayed late to finish the paperwork.
He shook off the gloomy thoughts, rose, and undressed. After a quick wash in the basin, he put on what Melora referred to as his yard skins, an ancient tunic with a fetching pattern of old stains, and some breeches so dirty they were close to sprouting. He made himself coffee and breakfast from old bread and a shriveled apple, refusing to think about work or the silent house or anything more than a grocery list for the market, and decided to take care of some chores.
I could start on that damn bramble bush between the shed and fence. Melora's been after me about it since the summer. When she and Gabby get back, we can plant a spring garden there, grow some beans or whatever.
While fetching a saw from the shed, he noticed holes in the roof and leaves on the floor inside. Unable to let this matter stand, he gathered his hammer and some spare pieces of wood, loaded nails into his mouth, and climbed onto the roof.
All right here?
He nearly fell off. A sliding sound ending in a rustle indicated the hammer landing in the brambles.
Who's there?
Me, former Lord Commander Gerald Thaxton replied as he came into the yard. Gerald looked healthier, although he was still all hard lines and angles inside his dirty rags. White stubble dusted his chin like frost on mahogany. Winston started heating up some meager leftovers on the hearth. He set out two tankards of ale. Gerald sat at the table with a sigh. He unwrapped his feet and warmed them by the flames of the hearth. Unfortunately, a smell began to permeate the kitchen. Winston served him hot stew in a trencher of stale bread, and the former Lord Commander gulped it down, improvised bowl and all, in half a minute. Sated, Gerald shook his head.
Bad. All bad news. What? Everything. This new stuff. This Grisla. They've figured it out.
Winston blinked.
What? Who's figured what out?
The rat fighting pit. That fellow you fought. He got hold of some bad Grisla. Some of the first stuff they made. I guess they made it wrong. Didn't know what they were doing. That's why they wound up hanging over the swordfish.
I thought that was something to do with the skins and the knots and territory.
Aye, it was. Just more to it than territory.
But what? Gerald rolled his eyes. Would you let me talk? I haven't slept in 4 days. It's a miracle I remember where you live.
Winston pressed his lips together and sat up straight. I don't know where the grizzly came from originally. The Knott's cooks made it, but they didn't make the first batch right. That's why that fellow in the rat-fighting pit went crazy. He wasn't supposed to smoke it, either. It was supposed to go up his nose. That happened a few more times, but the others were mostly in Dockside, and they got hushed up. And the cook who made it wrong, well, like I said, he had to pay. They tried again, but they blew up the apartment house. Thaxton scratched his nose. Now, here's what I don't understand. The first cook was hanging up over the swordfish, but so were Lavash and Bronson, the Knott's leaders. That leaves Bolwell in charge, and he's too dumb to keep the Knott's going on his own. I don't know who's in charge now. Lost in the thickets of Gerald's train of thought, Winston struck out for a familiar path.
Could it be Bedloe?
Gerald shook his head. He's still running around making arrests and bothering working people. The Knots and the Skins are running rings around him. Winston's fist clenched. His tendons creaked like old ropes. Gerald eyed the ham-sized fists before going on.
Skinner knows about the swords being reactivated and Victor rebuilding Edgewater.
How? How do they know?
The bedraggled lord snorted.
You think you can rebuild a fortress and people won't notice? What are they going to do, hide everything behind a bush? Is Victor going to stand out front and yell at people not to look?
The workmen live in town. Supplies come from town. People can see it from the road.
You went out there, didn't you?
Gerald nodded, sipping from the tankard.
What did you think?
I think I saw people turned into weapons. You do that to a person and they stop thinking about right and wrong. They start thinking that just following orders can explain anything away.
What about the Brotherhood? Where are they in all this?
Gerald shrugged.
Doing what they can.
He blew on his hands, staring into the fire.
I don't like it. I don't like the idea of them just running around doing what they want and not being accountable to anyone.
Is that what they're doing?
Is he helping them?
Does that mean he already knows about Plawright's connection with them? Winston drained his tankard.
I've some news.
He told Gerald about his meeting with Plawright and the latter's connection with the Brotherhood. Gerald tilted his head, still staring into the fire.
I knew about it. Hell, he's the one been keeping the thieves' road open since most of it goes across his farmlands.
Winston reddened, his hands clenching again.
Why didn't you tell me?
Gerald shrugged again, flames moved in his eyes.
Didn't seem that important. But doesn't he know I stood in that room while the spymaster raked me over the coals about the thieves' road? Doesn't he care?
Winston glared.
I should have known about it. You should have trusted me.
Gerald turned, his brows leaping up.
You think I don't trust you?
You didn't tell me about the thieves' road. You didn't tell me about the other shit going on. I've been trying to figure all this out and...
A fist slammed on the table. Winston fell silent.
Captain, are you sitting there telling me that I have hurt your feelings?
Winston leaned back, the chair creaking under him.
No, sir.
You think I don't trust you? Well, let me ask you this. Who else helped me burn 40 years' worth of dirty secrets? Who else was in that room? You think Anson Bode would have looked at that pile of miserable shit and still lit a match? Or Bedloe? Who else would have known what it was and still did what I told them to do? You could have run straight to Sly Skinner or some other bastard and tried to line your pockets. It was a gold mine of dirty secrets and you didn't even blink. So don't tell me I don't trust you or that I should have done anything different.
Gerald was leaning over the table, veins beating at his temples.
I did what I thought was right and that's all I could do. You want to sit there and look over my whole goddamn career and tell me what I did wrong? You think I don't do the same goddamn thing every minute of every goddamn day? No, sir, I do not.
Gerald sat back in his chair, his fire dimmed.
If nothing else gets through that iron head, think on this. I left you in charge of East Coast, of your home. So I know you know what it feels like to get to the end of every day and wonder what you should have done different, what you should be doing better. And there are some others I trust, too. You'll know who, when it comes time.
His face burning, Winston dropped his eyes. Gerald reached for his rags and began rewrapping his foot. Winston watched this operation, his mouth working.
Plowright. Should I trust him?
He'll walk a crooked mile to make some money, but he's better than most. And he's not a liar. He's telling the truth as far as he knows. What did he tell you?
Some skins are rolling a tax collector tomorrow, off of Pine Street.
Good tip. You should act on it.
Winston swore and threw the tankard into the fireplace. It clanged off the back of the hearth, shooting sparks, and came to rest in the kitchen's far corner on the firewood pile. Gerald watched him, his dark eyes thoughtful.
Sorry, I just... in my own goddamn town!
Gerald went on rewrapping his feet.
Then do something about it.
At the Galbraiths' sprawling mansion in Westmont, Adelaide stood at a servant's door off the kitchen. She shifted a paper-wrapped package and straightened her shawl, then rang the bell. Jerome Valdez opened the door. At sight of her, the stiff servant's mask fell away and he brightened.
"Adelaide! Come in, come in!"
She followed him into a warm mudroom. Servants' coats hung on the walls, and boots stood in a row under a rough-hewn bench. Through the doorway, she could see a kitchen that made Gert's enormous one look like a closet.
"I've Sir Galbraith's order here," she said, showing him the crackling paper package.
He took it and set it on a work table covered with shoes and leather care supplies. Linseed oil hung in the air.
"Lovely, lovely. He'll be so pleased when he's... well, I was going to say awake, but we both know I mean capable of speech. Want some hot tea?"
"Thank you, but I'd better get back. It's past noon already."
They exchanged pleasantries while he handed her payment for the package. Back outside, the city swirled around her and currents of bodies bundled against the cold. Soon she was making her way up the zigs and zags of Seaview, thinking of hot leek soup and warm bread. A beggar fell into step alongside her. The old woman's ragged gray hair streamed from under a dirty hood. Her face was disfigured by shiny burns.
"Spare the coin, miss."
Adelaide gave the woman a few coppers and wished her good day.
"Much obliged, miss. Woodburn House. Nightfall."
A gray eye fixed on her face, and then the old woman melted away into the crowd.
"That was my... Lord Woodburn. I'd never have known him in 1,000 years. I wondered if he'd teach me how to do that."
Lit by cold starlight, a small figure emerged from the trees and approached the crumbled stone pile of Woodburn House. Adelaide knocked on the huge oaken door and waited. Behind her, the grassy yard was still and silent. The rank smell of her uncle's dogs hung about the yard, and she heard them in the kennel. At the far end of the pile, lights glowed from cracks between boarded-up windows, and smoke curled from the chimney of what she guessed was the kitchen.
"I wondered if Eldest Campbell's in there with his feet up before the fire. I'll bet his socks are full of holes and he hates it."
The door creaked open. Lord Victor Woodburn stepped out, wearing his usual shabby black clothes. He was tying his cloak on.
"Come. Now, when we arrive at our destination, ask no questions, keep your name to yourself, and do not expect explanations. If I tell you to do something, do it."
He raised the hood over his head and indicated she should do the same.
"Tonight, we will have answers."
They walked in silence.
"This reminds me of a night long ago, when I snuck out to get Mother's bundle of herbs. As we passed over the Twilth River Bridge, I looked down and saw my little shadow and Father's great wolf one. I wonder what I'll see if I look at our shadows."
Lord Woodburn led her down an alleyway and then onto a wide street buttressed with fine shops, all closed for the night. Torches burned high overhead. Soon they took another turning, this one onto a badly cobbled road lined with oaks who spread skeletal branches overhead. Somewhere nearby, a fountain burbled.
"This is the Scholar's Causeway, the way to the Academy."
They reached the front door and entered. Once inside, they crossed paths with students or scholars up late. Everyone blanched at sight of the spymaster and hurried away.
"He knows his way around. I've never been down this hall before."
Down a hall lined with heavy doors, Lord Woodburn paused in front of one. His fist landed hard 3 times on it. Her heart had become a small, tight drum.
"Where are we? Who are we seeing?"
"Who is it?"
"No, not her. Not like this."
"Lord Victor Woodburn."
The latch rattled. The door was barely cracked before the spymaster pushed his way inside. The librarian stepped back, her long-fingered hands over her mouth and her eyes wide. Although 7 feet tall, the clothes hanging from her narrow frame gave her an insubstantial, fragile look. She wore a silken sleeping gown with a wrap and shawl, and thick, knitted woolen socks. Her long white hair was hidden by a cap on her head. Stifling warmth filled the little apartment. The window was covered by a blanket, and 2 braziers glowed in addition to the fire blazing in the hearth. The sitting room's walls were lined with bookcases.
My Lord Woodburn, it is a pleasure to see you, as always."
"Indeed."
"What brings you here so late? Not another threat against my safety, I hope."
"I need information."
Lord Woodburn glanced at Adelaide, then the door. She closed it.
"I am happy to be of service."
The librarian continued to back away toward the fireplace. Lord Woodburn stood in the center of the room, looking over the tapestries, piles of scrolls, books, and manuscripts. A mobile of sparkling crystal hung from the ceiling, sending shards of rainbow light around the room. He gestured at Adelaide.
"This is my niece. You may speak freely in front of her."
May turned and noticed Adelaide. She dipped her head in greeting.
"Good evening."
Adelaide nodded, a muscle working at her jaw.
I'm sorry for this. I don't know why we're here or what's going to happen, but I'm so, so sorry."
Mai turned back to the spymaster.
"What information does my lord need?"
"We have come on a personal matter."
Latte's tiny lips parted in understanding.
"Ah."
Victor's eye narrowed.
"What do you know?"
"Please, my lord, sit. I'll prepare some tea and..."
"I know you can look into minds, that it's part of whatever you are. Look into mine and see what will happen if you continue wasting my time."
May's long frame huddled in fear.
"Yes, my lord, but you cannot harm me."
The gray eye became a slit.
"She is fading. Alistair has no patience for expensive pets who ramble mysteries at peasants and refuse to take part in more important discussions. I have protected you. I have kept guards at your door and saved your life many times. I have kept you safe from afar, though you didn't know it. And I never asked for anything. At a word, it all goes away."
He inclined his head.
"You know how quickly the people of this city turn on anything they fear."
The Latte started, her enormous eyes blinking away tears.
May I sit?"
At a gesture from him, she crossed the room to the chair. She took a breath, drawing her wraps and shawls around her as she sank down into it. Sitting with her knees up near her shoulders, she looked like a great golden mantis. Lord Woodburn leaned back against the wall, crossing his arms. May's head sank down.
I have known your secret since the day you and Vincent walked out of the forest. I know your kind. You come from Laté. My people created you.
Created?
Lord Woodburn aimed a warning look at Adelaide. She pressed her lips together, determined to be quiet.
Yes, they have mastered many arts and sciences far more advanced than those of humanity. Humans are short-lived, physically and mentally resilient, and had lived among us as servants for centuries. You must understand, my people consider the death of our own a great, tragic loss. For one of us to die is to lose many thousands of years' worth of knowledge and experience. But other beings are not valued. We needed fighters, guards, and servants to do the dangerous work. Humans were ideal. There were a few tribes living in our cities. There were also mountain spirits who could change shape. We brought some of them into our cities. We began to change them, change their very nature. It took centuries. Finally, we found success. We had a creature that could shift between shapes at will, that was strong, fierce, loyal. Creatures that can survive punishments that would kill normal humans are four times the size of their animal counterparts. We bred them by the thousands. When we battled, it was they who went to war for us. Our siege engines were alive, from elephant-sized to cavalry to foot soldiers. Arathium was watered with their blood. They died in arenas for our entertainment. They died to protect our homes, our families. Eventually, our taste for war and violence diminished, but we relied on our creations too much to part with them. They became companions. They guard our houses, our property, our young, protect us from danger, serve us when we are in want.
Dogs?
Victor shook his head, his mouth twisted in disgust.
You're talking about dogs?
May didn't respond, her eyes fixed on the floor. With a hand that felt like dry sticks, Adelaide reached for the wall.
What is it then, a magic spell, a curse?
Victor's eyes shifted away from May.
Can it be undone?
No, my lord. It is as much a part of you as your heartbeat, or the shape of your bones. As you said, it is like breeding dogs. We used magic to combine the humans and the mountain spirits. It took many generations, many failures, but finally we had perfected the line. Barguests are the males, Virago the females.
Always wolves.
She shook her head.
Other animals, horses, lions, but none of those are here in Vitral.
The fire crackled.
I'm a Virago. What does that even mean?
And us, my brother and I. Arathium is thousands of miles away across the storming sea. Where did we come from? Our mother died at birth, and our father had no such ability. I discovered it by myself and taught Vincent. Explain.
The librarian sighed.
When first I saw you and Vincent, I knew not only what you were, but who.
100 years ago, when my father and I first arrived in Glendale as part of an envoy, we had a small group of your kind with us. Once here, they wanted to stay. Of course, we couldn't allow that and refused their request. When my father was preparing to leave, 4 of them went missing. We could not find them. But you are the very image of Alkaeson, who served as my bodyguard.
My ancestor? I have an ancestor named Alkaeson?
Adelaide wanted to write the name down right away, to hide it in her pockets and then in her cabinet of treasures in her little room over Gert's shop. Instead, she dared not move.
Your bodyguard. The irony is not lost on me.
No.
And you couldn't find them, you with your vaunted magics and sciences.
We did not wish to draw attention to the fact. My father left me behind to continue the search quietly.
To round up the strays, you mean? Why didn't you, if you knew us for what we were? Why say nothing?
I did not agree with my people's beliefs. I thought we should allow the Barghest and Virago to live as they wished. That if they ran away, it was because they were unhappy, no matter what the elders said. And I like it here. It is far better than the life of servitude in Arathium.
Victor turned, his lip curling.
I see.
May wiped away a tear and looked down into the fire at her side. Gunts, Adelaide said through numb lips. She registered Lord Woodburn glance at her, but couldn't stop herself from asking.
Withered Gunts, are they part of this somehow?
The Lattay's long frame sagged. She regarded Adelaide, her golden eyes miserable.
They are a terrible cruelty. Barghest and Virago were created to mate. They are the same species, but they can mate with humans. The results are not always certain. A Barghest and a human female might create another Barghest or Virago, but it takes a decade before the offspring can change, if they can at all. Victor and Vincent's father could not change, but the line passed through him.
And the Virago?
Viragos and humans produce Gaunts. Always.
The room feels so small all of a sudden.
Adelaide leaned against the wall.
It was a side effect that we never thought to repair.
Why not?
The Virago were repulsed by the Gaunts, and they usually aborted or killed them. And as far as mating, we always controlled those couplings.
Her glance flicked from one to the other.
But how do you know of them?
They came to my village. They killed my family, everyone. Anyone they didn't kill, they changed. Are you telling me if I become pregnant by a human, I'll give birth to one of them?
The librarian nodded.
I am sorry. I am sorry also for your father.
Vincent, what about him?
I didn't realize the effect the truth would have on him.
Far away, the bells in Spear Spire tolled the half hour.
About 20 years ago, he came to me for the truth. He reasoned, since I knew so much about Vitral, perhaps I could explain his ability. So I did. I told him everything that I've told you. A few days later, he disappeared.
The plague ship. Father organized it and then disappeared after.
He must have been planning to leave before the Duke even told him about that plague ship.
Lord Woodburn grunted in thought. Then he made a tight gesture toward himself and Adelaide.
What else? We can change shape, take more physical punishment than humans. What else is there? Any other side effects, as you call them? Weaknesses or strengths?
You will not be long-lived.
Threats now?
No, my lord. I mean to say that we did not breed for longevity. What good is a decrepit bodyguard or a worn-out soldier?
What?
No Bargast or Virago in current memory has lived past the age of 60 years.
I see.
The hot room sweltered as Adelaide and Victor processed this information. At length, Lord Woodburn sighed, then asked,
Very well, anything else?
No, my lord. Be content.
What?
The spymaster glared at the librarian.
Content with what?
You have 2 lives to the rest of the world's 1, and...
May's golden eyes shimmered.
You can hide what you are. No one need know of your difference, unless you will it.
Lord Woodburn shook his head.
You'll get no pity from me. You could have told us the truth about ourselves, about Vincent, all this time, and you did nothing. Hid here in your rooms with books and tea. There are savage monsters loosed in this country because of you. People were murdered because you did nothing. You'll get nothing from me.
He turned to leave, motioning for Adelaide to follow.
My lord.
What?
Please. The guards.
He paused, his hand on the door latch. Adelaide gathered her cloak around herself.
They'll remain.
He snatched open the door, nodding for Adelaide to follow. The librarian sighed.
Thank you, my lord.
She was in the middle of remarking on Victor's kindness when the door slammed shut. They walked through a night-quiet city back to Woodburn House. When they arrived, Lord Woodburn's hand paused on the door handle.
I am sorry. I suspected we would hear hard things, but it does no good to hide from truth. It finds you sooner or later.
Staring at the ground, Adelaide shook her head.
If I speak, I'll cry, and I won't do it in front of him.
Do not think...
I wish he'd just dismiss me. I want to get to bed.
I must warn you. Soon there will be a proclamation and a public event. You will see me in a very cruel light. You and the whole city. It is something I'm being forced to do as part of my duty. Things may go poorly. If the city becomes unsafe, you must come here. Come to the house and command Campbell to let you in. Tell him you speak with my voice.
He drew a scroll from one of his innumerable pockets.
Perhaps it is the wrong time, but His Grace signed the certificate. I've adopted you as my heir.
Oh, thank you, my lord.
Nerveless fingers accepted the scroll and unrolled it. She skipped over the officious language to 2 words that leapt from the center of the yellow page in huge, flowing script. Adelaide Woodburn.
I must keep it here for safety, but I wanted you to know in the event of my death.
Thank you.
Child, if that happens, my death, don't let them make you serve. They don't know about you other than you're related to me. They don't know about the ability. I have done things. Vincent and I came to this city for life, for opportunity, as you did. But the price for us to live here was service. Don't sell yourself to them, like we did.
Exhausted and unable to think or even ask what he meant, she whispered,
I won't, Lord Woodburn.
He nodded and stepped back toward the door.
You will forgive me for leaving you to walk home alone. I have a matter to attend to.
The oak door boomed shut.
Home. I want to go home.
The Anne and Belle's kitchen was cold and dark. Beeswax candles waited on the mantelpiece, but Adelaide ignored them. She sat at the table and inhaled.
Laundry? All the other shoes cracked, dirty, and salty with sweat. Dust, no matter how hard Annabelle scrubs. Lye soap, spicy cigarette smoke, yeast from the ale fermenting in the cellar, carrots, potatoes, beef, barley, all a little bit charred because Miriam burned the stew.
She put her head down on the table and pressed her face to the wood.
I have accepted some things I can never have. I have accepted other things I never wanted. But now I must accept both at once. I'll never have something I never knew I wanted.
Tears came. The sobs pinched the skin of her forehead against the table. Bent in half as she was, her back ached.
Who's that?
A figure smelling of laundry, soap, sweat, and tobacco smoke swept into the room.
Me.
Adelaide?
The smells, heat, and heartbeat that made up Annabelle approached and sat on the creaking bench, wrapped arms around her.
What's the matter? Never known you to cry like that. What's wrong?
Adelaide sat up, allowing Annabelle to dab at her face with a rag.
I found something out about my family today.
Oh, I? Not good news, then. What?
I can't have children.
Who told you that?
Someone who knows my family well.
The rag was set aside.
You didn't find out on your own, then? No troubles, I hope.
No.
Was it something you was wanting to do?
Adelaide sniffed and wiped her nose.
I don't know. I never thought about it. I suppose it's finding out I can't that's so upsetting. I hate having things decided for me. And there are so many things. So many things you have to accept in life that I've had to accept. This one just seems cruel.
Annabelle crooked her leg. They faced each other and she reached for Adelaide's hands.
Now listen here. You're going to find there's lots of things you can't do. No way around it, that's just life. Working folk like us have to make peace with that. But there are so many things you can do. You're a smart girl. And if you put your mind to it, you'll do much more than most. Don't spend your life worrying about all that you can't do, is what I'm saying. You'll drive yourself to despair. Ain't enough time to do it all, and what time you do have will be spent worrying. Now, the women in my family have problems too. I had Miriam, and that was it. My mom was a midwife, and she said it happens now and then. Something inside just goes wrong, and that's all there is to it.
Tired lines appeared around her eyes.
I know it seems cruel, but better to find out before than after. Understand? Some of them girls my mom took care of, they'd already been picking out names and daydreaming about their little ones. For years. Sometimes they were a few months along, and it just crushed them to lose those little lives. Worse, sometimes the babies were born dead, over and over. They kept trying, and it kept killing them,
little by little.
But.
Annabelle cocked her head, her smile drawing lines around her mouth. That said, there's always hope. And a child can be yours even if it didn't come out your body. There's people will have you believe that the only real child is one that comes out of you. You listen to me when I say they're full of shit. Love makes a family and nothing else. Plenty of children in the world need love and looking after.
Like me?
Aye, like you. Annabelle stood, wrapping her arms around Adelaide's shoulders and kissing the crown of her head. Come on. We'll get you some hot milk and get you to bed.
This concludes Chapter 28 of Virago. Stay tuned for the next episode, Chapter 29, in which a long-gathering storm that has been hanging over the city finally breaks. If you want to read along, Virago will be available in abridged print or ebook format from Amazon later this year. If you enjoyed this work, please remember to like, share, and subscribe so you never miss an episode of Escape into Storytelling. Thank you for supporting independent and self-published authors like me. Until next time, be seeing you.